support will be employed quietly.
Okay, fine.
This is the Sarcastic Voyage Podcast.
Podcast number 7, featuring Ron Algar-Watt, Matt Robotham, and Jason Ellis.
Panel discussion.
Okay, we are back. With us, as always, is Matt. And
hi.
With me is another one of my very talented high school friends that I wish to exploit, Jason Ellis. Jason comes to us from New York City very generously. Jason, thank you.
Hi, guys.
And very, very quickly, Jason, I know we've just sort of started this podcast and you haven't really had a chance to give us a listen to catch up on all what we're about. So I was going to give you the quick encapsulation of the Sarcastic Voyage podcast in a very brief period here.
Hit me.
We have, in the previous 6 podcasts, covered the subjects of incest, furries, fish fucking, and robot fucking. That's it. We're done. That's us.
That's great. Yeah. I hope we can cover those subjects again in this podcast.
Well,
we could certainly try.
I understand. Okay, good.
Yeah, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I know some stuff about those things.
Well, I know I recently was made aware of the fact that you, and this was, I think, a year ago now, had a play put on involving some measure of robotic orifices. Is that wrong?
Yeah,
to say
absolutely. The play opened with the main character shitting in his robot's mouth.
Exactly.
Ah.
And it gets better from there. Like that's.
But it was a heartwarming story. There was nothing lascivious about it. It truly was.
I read it. Like I wish I'd seen it performed, but I did read it, and it was very, very moving. And
that's beautiful.
It is.
Yeah, there was a movement at the very beginning. In fact,
I was trying to avoid that. That's fine. Okay. Jason, actually, one of the main things I wanted to bring you on for, I have since high school looked up to you as a performer, as specifically in the realm of music. You have been involved in various forms of music over the years. I had briefly considered ambushing you with some embarrassing recordings made in high school. I decided against it.
okay.
But just so you know, I do have copies of System Leaves You Dry.
Nice.
And the
that song's okay.
Yeah, it is. No, it really is. I played it. Amanda, my girlfriend, fiance, asked, well, "What do you got? What do you want to spring on him?" And I played it for her, and she's like, "This isn't bad. What was this? Like late '80s, early '90s?" Yeah. She's, well, they're pretty good. Well, okay. in any case, the specific thing I did want to discuss with you, I have come in the last few years, and Matt also has come to enjoy, many of us have come to enjoy, the genre that I suppose is known now as nerdcore, as music involving the nerdly pursuits that we all love, comic books and Dungeons and Dragons and computer games and so forth.
Yes, bravo.
And you have been making music like that longer than anyone I know.
That's kind of true. Although I didn't realize it until you mentioned that one random song. Like normally, I did a lot of it after the year 2000 or so. And what do you call it? Frontalot had already come out with Fuck the Creationists. Mm-hmm. So the cherry was broken.
Actually, I believe that was MC Hawking, but.
Oh, no, you're right. I thought that was a pseudonym. Sorry, my bad.
No, in fact, the guy who's responsible for MC Hawking, I have no idea who he actually is. But Frontalot is a different guy.
Okay. Well, that's actually good, because in that case, I may be one of the more enduring failed nerdcore artists.
Well, failed is a complicated term, because, I mean, in this, you know, and I hate to sound like, you know, I'm Mr. Knows Everything About the Internet guy, or, you know, this is a dynamic paradigm here, or, you know... But really, the internet is not about...
You can say stuff like that. It's funny.
Yeah, but I don't know what the fuck it means. you ask your mom or you ask anyone you would meet at a normal day job who MC Frontalot is or who MC Chris is or, you know, any of those guys, they're not going to know. I mean, it's a internet celebrity is not the same as proper celebrity. So,
yeah. Yeah, one person that was talking about the problem making hit records now is I think this was Weird Al actually. I think I'm dropping Weird Al on you right now. He was saying one of the tough things about it is that he doesn't know what's a hit anymore. It's like hard to figure that out now because people just like coagulate around these weird like internet memes and songs and stuff. So
It seems like with his latest releases, he's kind of embraced that. He has specifically released one song every 4 or 5 weeks. This entire summer. I think he's realizing that the business is changing and he's trying
He's caught a hell of a second wind, that guy.
Yeah, he really has. You say that. I may have to correct you a little bit there.
Oh, because he never lost the first wind, is that?
Well, yeah, really. I mean, it was interesting when Michael Jackson died not too long ago. He wrote this really touching little couple paragraph thing about how he'd done Eat It and then he had done Fat. And he was going to go back to the well a third time and do a parody of, what was it, Black or White, I think.
Like that would have hurt.
In the early 90s. And Michael said, no, this is too personal. This is about something serious. Don't. And Weird Al said, that was a turning point in my career right there. He said, if I'd done that, that would have been the last nail in my coffin. I would have been the Michael Jackson guy.
Huh.
Instead, I did the parody of Nirvana, and I got, you know, my second win.
Oh, yeah.
And everyone loved me for that, and then I realized I needed to ride the crest and pick different guys, and so Michael really turned my career around. So,
wow.
Yeah, it was nice, because Weird Al's a really nice guy, above all else. Like, he's funny, he's enduring. He was arguably the first nerdcore guy ever. But beyond that, he's so nice. He never has anything bad to say about anybody. And it was really sweet. But yeah, as far as the stuff you've done, I have a song that I dug up and I found where I'd first gotten it. It was actually 1995 that you'd made this song. I had it as a System 7 sound file.
Yeah.
wow.
Which is the technology we had available to us at the time was not much. It was much like we had just previously discussed Mark Darren's abilities, and you can speak to this, to coax things out of the Commodore 64 that no one believed possible.
So true.
And I would say that's analogous to what you were doing with your, I don't even know what you had back then, but couldn't have been more than a Mac 2 or something.
Yeah. Like an LC. I don't know.
And you've been doing some fantastic stuff. And really the song that he made, Matt, I'll play it for you. It's about being on the internet. It's about sort of that first, you know,
Nice.
The lyric is something like intercontinental on a whim. Like, I'm at my computer and I have the whole world in front of me, and it was fantastic.
I'm connected, a digital net flying freak. I got information at my fingertips coming from next week. Becoming intercontinental on a whim. My world is where I swim. I got my Hura, my PIOPC, an herbal D, and I'm adjusting them immediately. I gotta be, cause I'm a little burnt, a little crispy. I gotta jumpstart my mind, cause I'ma be up all night, you see. Becoming intercontinental on a whim. My world is where I swim. I'm connected to digital.
That's really cool.
Modems were exciting.
Yeah, and it's
a musical.
And
musical they were at that time.
I missed that, man.
It's true. Yeah.
To check out the internet.
Welcome.
<You know. laughs> When I was very young, one of my buddies had actually one of those super old modems where you put your phone on it.
Oh yeah, like
nice.
And I thought I was fucking in space. That was so that was so hot at the time.
Oh yeah. Fuck, that's awesome.
That was. Yeah. I mean, I was a fairly early adapter, but
yeah, you couldn't do a goddamn thing after that though.
No,
that was pretty much it. Just put the phone on the thing and then you just looked at it.
Like, yep, that was the future. Internet.
But since then you've done songs about I know Diablo,
sure,
what else?
Starcraft.
Yeah, you, I mean,
there's a Hillsfar reference in one of my songs for the Truly Old School.
Well, as far as specific references, I can name a ton,
right? But whole songs, yeah,
yeah, because even the Beastie Boys dump like Fantastic Four references and things like that. But
God bless them.
Absolutely. But really, you, I mean, and it's fantastic. and I really, I'm not really going anywhere with this other than, hey, look at my cool friend. He's been doing this cool thing that we're now all into.
This is why he's here now.
but really, it's great. And I always kind of look to you as like, well, you know, and this sounds sort of corny or whatever, but you are my friend that lives in New York and you're kind of 10 seconds ahead of everyone else, you know? I mean, it's true. And the funniest thing is last time I came to see you, you had moved to, what is it, Spanish Harlem?
Yeah, and that ended great.
And you were making bluegrass music. Because that's what you do when you move to Spanish Harlem.
Indeed.
I'll link to this in the show notes. There's a fantastic video that he made. Can you tell us about this for Rocky Top?
Yeah, it was like a slightly like harder version of this old Tennessee standard. It's old, like it's from the 50s or 60s, I think. Anyway, Rocky Top, and it's like a classic song. So, but the way that I did it, there was something really absurd about it. And the idea with the video, we wanted to make a video, and the idea was, how absurd was it to be singing about the mountains in this urban environment? And so it was going to be about escape,
right?
And you know. That's pretty much how it got started. And then my friend, this other guy, was like, and yeah, we could totally shoot you in the shower. I've got this great idea to shoot you with the film sped up in the shower.
Oh, was it sped up?
The film was actually slowed down. It appears sped up.
Right, right. But I mean, so you had to lip sync at a different rate and all that
stuff. Right, at half speed, yeah.
Wow, nice.
Wow, and, Jesus.
So he was like, let's do this in the shower. And I'm like, okay, and we can make it about this absurd urban escape. Mm-hmm. And by having it be a unifying shower fantasy moment for all these New Yorkers who are barefoot on really disgusting pavement.
And that's the best part, because I really thought, okay, well, you know, you're an old friend, and we've been in situations before where, okay, maybe you've been without a shirt or something. You know, we did plays together in changing rooms, and I'm not implying there was any kind of inequity.
You never saw that much of me?
No, but really, I thought, okay, I can watch 3 minutes of this, I suppose. I'm not, you know, I'm comfortable enough in my sexuality, and it really didn't need to go anywhere else. And then I'm like, oh, he's going outside. All right. And when I was trying to explain to Matt, this is my old friend, this is what he does.
Yeah.
I said, you know what? Let me just show you this. Here you go.
Yeah, this was my first exposure too.
Can I turn out? Did you? Yeah, some people like the cover I did of Toto's Africa.
Oh, that's another one.
Oh, fuck yeah, that was the other one. That was awesome.
Yeah.
Nice. All right. You've heard enough.
I heard that I think a year ago or something.
What if
I dug the hell out of it?
If you like, I can certainly drop it into the recording when we're finished here. I have been trying to keep things relatively royalty free, so I might only play a brief clip. But
isn't that very parody?
Yeah, it might be. Is that under parody? I don't know.
I think you're protected both under parody laws and of laws of total obscurity of podcast.
This is
We've had that going for us for a while now.
Oh yeah, yeah, and hopefully.
Yeah. So you're pretty well protected. And if Toto came down on you, I would be so jealous.
Well, I'm sending it to you if that happens.
That would be the best advertisement for the thing ever.
If I got a phone call from Toto, an angry phone call from Toto, I would be, you know, I would be gleeful. It would be the best thing ever.
Especially if they were swearing at you the whole time.
Be like, Jason, my name is Toto. I've got a problem with you on the internet.
This is seriously, though, this cover of Africa is the – I was putting together a little animation of the stupid webcomic that Matt and I do, and I was thinking of songs, you know, music that would work to it. And at the time, we were doing sort of we're in the jungle, we're doing kind of a jungle adventure thing, and that music fit perfectly. And unfortunately, I never finished the trailer, but I thought that would have done, you know, it was a nice mix of a song people know, but then like what's going on here? Was there any kind of genesis to that? Was there any kind of like, were you just pissed off singing in the car, or
the genesis to it was all these conversations my friend and I were having about the song Africa and how goofy it was, because it's just some of the lyrics are so over the top. Like he pointed out the one
where they compare one mountain to another mountain.
Right. That was one of his
the
big
worst
quibbles.
Musical similes I've ever heard.
See, that's exactly right.
Okay.
So, But at the same time, it's an incredibly enduring song as far as its, you know, its appeal. It's really appealing. It's like, you know, you love listening to this song. Everyone loves this song.
Well, it's a catchy pop melody. I mean, it doesn't matter.
It is. And it's so nonsensical, and it's borderline racist in this weird way.
I suppose that's true. Although, you know, there was that sort of Africa fetish that sort of in the 80s, I'm sure you remember this, you know, Sting, and everybody was all about, let's go save Africa, let's go to help Africa, let's go to Africa. And I think they kind of left out the saving and helping part. Was the problem.
That's true. And, like, I guess what I'm specifically referring to is the idea of putting it up on a pedestal as a mythical place, because doing that with primitive societies is now considered racist.
Really?
They were doing a similar thing with
Australia. Yeah, everything is considered racist now.
What's that?
Similar with what?
They were doing a similar thing with Australia for a while, too, weren't they?
Oh, Aborigines, you mean? Or
I think – well, I know that there was a fascination with Australia a few years ago.
Oh, you're baiting me. I see what you're doing here.
I most certainly am not.
Australia's incredible. It's the deadliest place on Earth.
It's true.
No, I'm not arguing the merits of Australia at all. I'm calling Matt out for the fact that he's skirting dangerously close to Verboten here.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah. Sure you don't. No, actually, Australia is a fantastic place. I read it.
It's a great place. And see, that actually is like a mystical wonderland. So that's not racist to talk about Australia in that way.
And fun to drive around in a dune buggy.
That's what Captain Picard says, yes.
You have a lot of anecdotes.
There's a great book, Bill Bryson. It's one of my favorite authors. He writes a lot of travel stuff and a lot of language stuff. Really, really fun guy. But he wrote a book about Australia, and he opened with two brief stories that basically sum up Australia to him. And it was, at some point in the recent past, there was a seismic disturbance that they basically believe someone set off an atomic bomb in Australia. But because Australia is so empty and vast, they have no idea who did it or where. The second one was, Australia once lost their prime minister in the sea. He went in for a swim and he never came out.
He said, box jellyfish.
It could be, but they never found any remnants. They never found any scraps of clothing. They never, nothing. Just
gone. Oh my God.
The disintegrator variety.
And this was his prologue to the book. And he said, know these two things about Australia and you'll begin to understand, you know, you'll begin to grasp what Australia is all about. And he hooked me right there. That stuck with me.
Eaten alive by a rare Australian monster with a weird name.
What's that?
Yeah, I have a similar quote. I've got a play coming up. And it's about Transylvania, and there's a similar quote about Transylvania there, which is essentially, it's from this travel guide to Transylvania from the mid-1800s, and the quote is something like, the guy is just, it's like a travelogue, so he's writing about what's going on, and his coach is taking him through some terrible Transylvanian forest, and he's like, look, do you see that tree over there? And the guy's like, yeah. And he's like, my mother was eaten by wolves under that tree. The guy's like, what? And he's like, the guy shrugs and is like, eh, it's Transylvania.
That's pretty
People
good.
People are never not being eaten by wolves.
Yeah. It's true, though. It's a real thing. I didn't make it up. I did not make that up.
That's fantastic. Where is Transylvania, incidentally? Like, where?
It's in Romania.
Really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I did not know that.
Smack in there.
I was hoping I could sort of lead that into something, and it just kind of died. Yeah. Oh, Romania. Okay.
Yeah. they were gonna build a theme park there.
Really?
Yeah. Dracula Park.
Did they decide
Dracula
that it was...
Park. That's right. That's exactly what it was.
Did they decide that it was racist?
Yes, they decided it was racist.
Against vampires.
Against old world Europeans. Oh. Because it presents them in a comical light, which is not like reality.
Yeah, but go ahead.
I just like the idea of like Dracula style vampires picketing the place. This is a complete insult.
Yeah, that's what my play's like.
We do not all wear tuxedos. Okay, we're all wearing them now, but we don't have to.
It's formal wear. Blah.
You can't leave out the blah. There's a history podcast that I just started listening to that How Stuff Works does. It's like a little 10-15 minute, you know, nuggets of history, and they were talking about the real Vlad the Impaler, and it's not particularly obscure stuff, but I was never aware of the fact of what impaling actually was.
Oh, really? Not fun.
And I'm assuming you guys both know, but for our listeners that don't know, and if you are squeamish, perhaps another podcast maybe for you. where were you when we were talking about fish fucking, for Christ's sake?
Look, apparently, fish fucking is fine, but violence, I'm right on that.
Apparently they would stand the victim up on two different, like a foot on each horse, and the horses would slowly walk until the victim's legs were considerably spread apart, and then a spear would go up the anus into, I guess, up through the head, is that correct?
Yeah. Yep.
And then they just leave him on it for until he died, and he was there aware of it and in pain with the spear up his ass and jabbing into his head for days.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because
he was a fun guy, Vlad the Impaler.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, to say no.
It's an effective deterrent.
I would imagine so.
Against what exactly?
I would expect everyone that's been impaled is never, you know, no recidivism among impaling victims.
Yeah. Plus, I mean, the look of it. You know, people walk by you know, town square. There's the impaled guy. Be like, oh, I can't spit in the floor of the tavern anymore.
You know, some people just get lawn gnomes.
See, that smacks to me of a committee or like a, you know, somebody got together and said, you know, crucifixion's just not enough. What can we do to give it a little zazz?
I think it was like that, probably for over hundreds of years.
There's no ass involved. There needs to be some ass to really make the, yeah.
Yeah. That's the really, really cruel thing about, yeah. Sorry. I was going to say the really cruel thing about impaling is that for the first second or two, it's actually kind of nice.
Oh, this isn't so bad. Duh.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it all goes to shit.
Yeah.
Sorry, I interrupted.
Wow. Where have all these bowel movement puns come from? You didn't used to. you're surprised. Okay. I'm not disappointed. I'm not unamused. It's just not. I'm surprised that you've changed your pitch up in recent years.
I guess I'm hanging out with a lot of fart lovers now.
Nothing wrong with that.
That's the part of town I'm in.
We're not here to
get a lot of those in New York.
A lot of those in Spanish Harlem, or have you guys moved
again? Oh, we did move again.
Did you?
Moved away. Got robbed by the neighbor.
Oh, God.
Yeah, wanted to go. But that's okay, because the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms raided his house shortly thereafter, the day before we moved.
Oh, well,
that'll learn him, I guess.
Did they get your stuff back?
Well, some Good Samaritans returned my PlayStation 2 to me.
Oh, nice.
Nice.
They were the dudes that were downstairs at the time. Mm-hmm. Anyway. So he's in jail for a really long time.
Oh, well, good.
They found, they found 200,000 rounds of ammunition.
Good Lord.
Wow. It was,
yeah, and weren't you living near where President Clinton, former President Clinton, had set up shop?
Yeah, totally, right near there.
That's I don't know. I don't know why that makes it a little more unsettling to me. Also, go ahead.
The neighborhood's it's a really cool area up there.
I came to visit you there, and it was fantastic. Like I heard Harlem, and I'm thinking the typical white boy, you know, grew up in the sticks, I went there, and it was fine. I wasn't, you know, no problem at all. And somebody's like, oh, when you get into the hundred, you know, like the streets, when you get up past the 100,
it was the only neighborhood in New York I've lived in where different races actually really interacted, talked to each other.
So it wasn't as sort of divided up as.
It wasn't. Normally, there's people just don't talk to each other at all. But there was a lot of community and friendliness up there. It was really cool.
Awesome.
And a guy with 200,000 rounds of ammunition.
And Bill Clinton.
Yeah, and some other craziness.
That's insane. One thing. By the way, I am the master of segues. I've proclaimed this early on. I'm great at moving from one topic to the next. And
you are the segue king.
It's true. And now I don't even remember my brilliant horrible segue here. I think I was going with speaking of weirdness, which may be my worst one yet.
You got to go with that. Speaking of segues.
It's true.
Let's see what else is in the news today.
At least, you almost got me there. No, I do have a note here too, because I was talking to Matt briefly about your wedding, which happened a couple of years ago now, and I did not want to misrepresent you in any way, and I also have sort of a personal agenda here anyway. But you had a wedding that involved, if I'm not mistaken, supervillains. Is that correct?
We did have a supervillain that did take out the priest.
Really?
Yeah.
Please enlighten us.
Yes, please.
Well, it was at that point in the ceremony, he sort of, I think it was at the time when they ask if anyone has anything to say against the union or something like that. So he came in and announced that he was disrupting the ceremony. And the priest actually, who was sort of a dark priest, attempted to fend him off. And was disabled and possibly killed by the antagonist.
Best wedding ever.
But you ended up getting married, correct? I mean,
I did. Well, yeah, I joined together with my bride to defeat him. Unable to defeat him myself.
Now there's a symbol of togetherness, of partnership, of everlasting, you know, cooperation. So much better than rings or any of that. I mean, really, teaming up to defeat a supervillain. What?
Yeah, literally triumphing over evil.
Right.
It was indicative of who we are, and you know, it was the kind of thing, like just like my music and my plays and stuff. It's very silly but very serious.
Well, yeah, and you've again coming back to the music
more silly.
Thing, well, yeah, of course. But coming back to the music thing, there's always been this pervasive nerd element to your stuff, and that's what I've always sort of admired about it is you've never been ashamed of your, you know, Star Trek and comic book and everything else roots. I mean, you're all about it, which is
no doubt. I love it.
And when we came up in the early '90s, it was just there wasn't a lot of that. There wasn't this nerd chic. There wasn't this, you know. It wasn't cool to walk around with a Green Lantern t-shirt. It was, you know, you were a dork and you didn't care. And it was, you know, it's very refreshing. And even still, you're having, you know, a wedding with a supervillain. Of course, you have no control over that. I mean, that.
Yeah, right. If they show up, you've just got to deal with them.
Yeah. I mean, you're in New York. These things, as we know, happen.
Exactly.
But nice to know that you could be prepared for that sort of thing when it does happen.
It's true.
Sure. I try to, you know, I play a lot of role playing games to prepare for these eventualities as well.
It's true, and and really, if there's any sort of a zombie apocalypse or any kind of a insane computer or any, I mean, you're pretty much prepared for all of them. If I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, definitely. I'm one of the go to guys of the community for supernatural or fictional disasters.
Fantastic.
Yeah, Most people just stop at the zombie apocalypse. It's nice to know someone else is planning for all the other apocalypses.
No, I've exactly. Sort of specialized myself in the robot apocalypse. That's the only thing that I'm ready for. Everything else, I'm doomed on.
Good. There could be there's no way of telling which is going to come first. I think that once one comes, they're all going to come in rapid succession.
Well, see, I'm not so sure about that. The thing that I've argued previously in the podcast is I believe the robot apocalypse is already upon us, and I say this because of the Wii Fit. I don't want to repeat too many jokes, but just to say, I live in perpetual fear of shame and dread that the little robot that lives in my computer is telling me that I'm fat and that I'm not exercising enough. And if you think about shame as a weapon, more than lasers, more than stomping you into the ground, but shaming you,
that's true. Perfectly for me.
Yeah.
That's the most potent of all of those items.
And there right now is a robot in my home that I paid money for to put in my home that can make me feel shame. How is
and probably wants to.
Oh yeah. And it
runs on pleasure.
it's passive aggressive to me, and it causes me great guilt and great. And
you're right. You know what? The Wii Fit is a dick.
It is.
I never really thought about it.
And it is.
It's true.
It is the living embodiment of the robot apocalypse. It's not the explosive James Cameron apocalypse. It's not the Matrix. It's more subtle. It's more psychological.
Yeah.
And that's how they get you. Cause you know, you think you're getting the flashy one.
It's totally passive aggressive too. Like once I was trying to weigh something. So I got on I weighed myself and then I got on with holding something.
Oh, it tells thinking you that I would. That. Then... It says you could use this function. Do you know that? Like it's not, that's not something it's not prepared to do. Like you're not doing something outside of its parameters.
I try not to listen to those things, the things that it tells me.
If you say you don't want to, it hangs its head, by the way.
Oh, fucking.
Yeah.
That is so manipulative.
And anyway, so you were weighing something. And,
So I was weighed, and I was like, I'm smarter than the Wii. And it's like, I think you just picked up something that weighs 36 pounds. I was like, you dick.
Yeah, it will say, do you want to hear a fitness tip? And if you say no, it will hang its little anthropomorphic head. And say, oh, well, if you ever want to hear one, I'm here for you.
I wonder if you reject it enough times if it'll actually commit suicide.
You just turn it on one day and there's just a note there. You never listen to me.
Well, my trainer would often take a day off.
Yeah.
She actually will. Yeah, she'll. I picked the female one just because, you know, I have issues. But and sometimes the dude will be there and he'll be like, "Oh, your regular trainer took the day off. I'm here."
And she's got a hangover.
What?
Wow.
What do you mean she took the day off? You can do what I say. So yeah,
that's crazy. I didn't know that. That's wonderful.
I own you.
Yeah, it's, you know, I paid $50 for this thing. It's you know, listen to, obey me. And no. So yeah, Robot Apocalypse already here. But the reason I bring up your wedding is because I myself am beginning to plan one. My
congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. My Canadian fiance and I are looking to get hitched, and this is of course my second, and you know, not really looking forward to a big ceremony or anything like that. And she even less than I. We found around the corner from my home, and I'll put this in the show notes. The, what is it? God, I always get the name wrong. The Vagabond Magical.
Vagabond's Enchanted Chapel, I think, is the real
Vagabond
name.
Vagabond Enchanted Chapel. And I have pictures of this thing, and it's the saddest place on earth. It's,
oh, God, it's awesome.
It's painted bright pink, like hot pink. And it's got about 3 feet square of vegetation, and around the outskirts of it is just, you know, desolation.
It's like one of those places for marrying drunk people.
Yes. It's got a little trellis, and it's got little like school, like plastic elementary school chairs for the.
They're like Barbie doll pink.
Yeah, they're painted bright pink, and it's the sad. It's like a Tom Waits song waiting to happen.
That's okay.
It is fantastic, and I can't wait to get married there.
Oh, that's wonderful.
So I mean, you went with the sort of the bombastic, you know, the supervillain wedding. We're going, I think, for just the Chapelot love. Awful embracing the cheese, like perhaps I'll get a powder blue tuxedo with the ruffles.
I was gonna suggest it. It's perfect.
Yeah, and you know, maybe she'll put on just a little too much makeup and
sweet.
But yeah, that's something I've been wanting to mention, and I want to share with our audience. So
and of course, stay tuned for the wedding special podcast.
Oh, absolutely, because Matt will be there. And
but okay, Al's walking down the aisle now. He's looking really mad at me.
Yeah, exactly. Really? Especially because he's on Skype as he's coming in.
Yeah.
the thing they mention in the little pamphlet, they actually don't speak to you. Like, they don't have time to speak to you. She just says, come by and get. And she sounds like, you know, she smokes, you know, 30 packs a day. And, come on by and pick up a pamphlet. You don't need to. we don't need to talk.
Look, there's nothing I can tell you that the pamphlet doesn't say. Just take it.
Pretty much. You basically do your doctor girlfriend, and that's more or less what this lady sounded like.
They went to all the trouble of getting them printed up. You don't want one?
It's on the hot pink paper. Come on.
You sound like We Fit 2.0.
Starring Harvey Fierstein?
It just becomes more more guilting.
Oh, you don't feel like exercising today. Well, that's too fucking bad.
But if you read the pamphlet, it says basically – you can pay for a 10-minute service. They don't want you in there long. They don't want children there. They don't want more than, I think, 20 people there. They don't want. They have all these stipulations that are basically get in, get married, get the fuck out. It's fantastic. And I wish I could remember the lady who performs the service's name. Her name starts with a Z, which already indicates class.
That's awesome.
Well, I mean, yeah. You know she's mystical because it starts with a Z. I mean, you got.
Well, yeah, exactly.
It's like Zatanna and like.
Zelda.
Yeah, there you go. Zelda. Thank you.
It's Zelda? That. That's awesome.
Yeah. No, it's not Zelda, but I was thinking of another enchanted Z.
Link. Link, I need a hand over here.
You got to save me.
Get that Triforce out of your hand, would you? And come rescue me.
All of you have the courage.
It's a secret to everybody.
Okay. Anyway, that's something I've been wanting to mention that we're having.
That's great news, and that place sounds way more honest than any of those, you know, fancy the places that want you to stay longer than 10 minutes.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, because
awesome. Those places hate you just as much as this place hates you.
Oh, sure, but this place is open.
This place is obvious about it. Just like, look, we don't give a shit how long you goddamn. Yeah, enjoy your happy life together.
Yeah. I know. The extent of their artifice is these, like, pink chairs. Pink plastic chairs. That's they're like, yeah, we care.
Well, there's some flowers. I mean, we care. You know. But I mean, the place is called the Vagabond Enchanted Chapel. I mean, what does that conjure up to you, the word vagabond?
Yeah, drunk weddings.
Yeah, exactly. Like there's the ceremonial flaming trash can, you know, and the guy's got the beat up old top hat and yeah, you know.
Now please go around back while we can mug you. I mean, give you da bouquet.
I should mention
that's what they call it, da bouquet.
Da bouquet. I should mention, Jason, you are already covered as far as wedding gifts go. You gave me a fantastic wedding gift years and years ago. When I moved in with Mark Darren, you were under the mistaken impression that that we were getting married because we were roommates.
I was so happy for you.
Yeah, you were. And it was really more of an Ernie and Bert situation, but you were convinced.
What do you mean? Is that different somehow?
Is Mark leaving cookies in the
bed?
Wait,
were they living in sin? Is that what you're saying?
No. Listen, Matt and I have a very special relationship. He doesn't know about the Jell-O. We really just need to keep this.
I mean, Bert and Ernie, they were living in sin, is what you're saying? They were not married?
No.
Well, they did
sleep
in separate beds.
It's Yeah. And they were clearly marked whose bed was whose.
I mean, you know, they could push them together, but
I don't think
they didn't want to do that every night.
They have those ineffective felt hands. Yeah. They can't really. You
know. Well, that's how relationships get after a little while. I you're obviously not married.
Yeah, then they'd go on vacation, and they'd have to go on vacation and sort of reignite their love.
Yeah, but they'd always want to go to like right. the pigeon caverns or like the paperclip
museum.
They're
like, can we go somewhere and celebrate the letter Q?
We did that last year, Ernie.
Come on, Bert. Bert, you're spending too much time with the pigeons, Bert.
I got my paperclips.
I think you love those paperclips more than you love me, Bert.
Well, you're always spending too much time with your damn rubber ducky.
It was actually a fantastic little short film. I don't even know if they got it online or not, that Mark and another old friend of ours, Roman, made. What was it? Ernie and Bert, The Troubled Years, I think they called it. It was really great.
It's extremely funny. It's still extremely funny.
It is. And so many people have done the gag, you know, since. But I can't. Yeah. I don't know that anyone did it before them. I'm going to say they pioneered the idea of making Sesame Street filthy. So Avenue Q owes them a couple of bucks, I think.
Here.
But anyway, this wedding gift that you gave me was a pickle picker. I don't know if you remember this. This is some time ago. This is 15 years ago. It's a device from like a kitchen supply store, like, you know, someplace like that. It looks like a long pencil with like a little thing you push in, and a little claw retracts out from it, and you can pick up a pickle from the bottom of the jar.
Wow.
I still have this thing because I save stuff like that, and I still have the pickle picker you gave me as a wedding gift, and so you're covered. Maybe I'll wrap it up and open it again just on your behalf. But
I'd be happy to send you a gift certificate to get that rewrapped.
Yeah. So yeah, I got the pickle picker, so thank you for that.
Best wedding ever.
So anyway, Matt, for a gift, that's what you got to be. That's you got to go, like, we're going to register. Where do you even buy a pickle picker?
Dude, I got you a gift. I gave you that great setup on Twitter the other day.
Oh god, that's true. He gave me a good joke setup, and that, you know.
That's the greatest gift of all, man. That shit's from the heart.
It's true. It is very true. He basically jumped on a comedy landmine for me because he could have done the joke and he didn't. Instead, he took the fall. He lay down and gave it to me.
That's a good friend.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. It is. You're absolutely right. However, you didn't give Amanda shit, and that's bad form.
Oh, friend. Amanda's getting something. I like her.
Ah, all right then. I should mention Jason, in case you don't know, he is pretty much best friends with my fiance. That's sort of, we all sort of know each other. So
neat.
Just so you know the dynamic here. So
okay.
So
yeah, I'm not gonna make sex jokes about your about.
Oh
about
no, no 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 no!
I deeply appreciate that.
Nobody
does enough.
Nobody makes more sex jokes about me and Matt than she does. If that's what you're saying.
Oh, good, very good.
She believes that if I were to actually have sexual intercourse with another man, it would not be nearly as gay as making a webcomic with Matt. She's said that to me on numerous occasions.
I've never heard that one.
Yeah, there's nothing gay about anal intercourse, but the webcomic thing, yeah.
Comparatively.
Well, having a webcomic where you go on adventures together, that even I got to say, that's pretty gay.
Yeah, but we never even touched each other.
No, that's not necessary for gay.
Our love was a purer love than that.
Yeah, exactly. We're talking about gay love, not gay sex.
wow. All right. I don't know what to say to that.
There's nothing. There's no content.
It's true. It's absolutely true. So you have a tail.
That's a medical misnomer.
Do you still have the tail? That's one of my great segues.
I do. It's really it's a pilodonic cyst on my ass.
Has it actually grown in since this was many years ago when I was first made aware of?
It has yet to become prehensile.
Oh, that's a shame.
Yeah. It's too. I'm waiting.
No, this happened one time. One time I came up to visit him, and there's this great story. Actually, his then girlfriend, now wife, Karen, wonderful girl, woman, I suppose. I'm thinking back when we were all sort of in college, so I'm not really thinking of everyone as grown men and married and so forth. So
I like girl. Girl is better.
Yeah. but fantastic person in any case. Had this great story about the discovery of what he thought was a tumor or some horrible lump on his back that ended up being a tail. And she just told it so beautifully. And I heard this story in the course of this weekend 30 times. And I will never forget that my friend Jason has a tail. And I'm hoping by now he's like a chimp man.
Now neither will any of you.
Yeah. So you got a lump on your ass, huh?
Yes. Isn't that awesome? You want a pics?
Hey, believe me.
I'm going to put it up on Facebook.
We do need a picture for the episode.
It's true. We do need cover art. So
it's colorful.
Hey, you want to play chicken? You're probably going to win. But...
No.
All right.
You've seen enough of my naked body.
It's true. It's very true. But seriously, you were growing a tail. Has it actually grown further than whenever this was, 95 or whatever last I heard about it?
No, it's a lump on my ass. It's disgusting.
Oh. But it really was.
I would love to perpetuate that it's, you know.
Was it not medically described to you, though, as sort of a throwback, as sort of that you were actually growing a tail? Was that incorrect?
You know what the actual thing was that the description of this ailment was just the idea is that it medically it was for a long time thought to be a congenital tail.
Ah.
Was later recently, I don't know how recently, discovered that it was nothing more than a just a conglomeration. It's just a lot of calcium and protein deposits. Wow. It's a bundle of disgusting hair and teeth, I guess, kind of lodged underneath your skin in a place that's very sensitive.
Really, teeth?
That's what they say about, you know.
Wow.
Fingernail material, tooth material.
See, when
just
I hear
sort of like miscellaneous body stuff.
Well, see, when I hear of that happening, I go back to the standard, story of the absorbed twins.
Right.
I'm sure you guys both know the grotesque stories of people who have absorbed, you know, a potential twin in the womb and they have weird body parts.
You absorbed a twin in the womb?
No, not me personally. Apparently most people do, or many people do, or this happens a lot.
Yeah.
Where we start out in the early egg dividing stages as twins and eventually...
Yeah. And the most evil twin will always prevail.
Right.
Well, yeah. Sometimes the evil twin will just become like a separate personality within your body and tell you to kill.
It's true. It's true. That happens quite a bit. And sometimes it takes a blow to the head for this personality to emerge.
And sometimes that'll just make you a mob boss.
Or sometimes it'll just make you sort of an upper crusty dandy.
sometimes it'll make you see a small green floating alien.
No, that didn't happen as a result of head trauma. That was just normal.
Not on camera head trauma, anyway.
Fair enough.
You have a bold new theory for the origin of the Great Gazoo?
The problem is Fred and Barney both saw him, so I really don't think that you could.
Well, Barney was just what do you call it? Barney
was playing just, along.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, sure you do, Fred. Yeah, Barney I see him.
Barney was a really supportive friend. I think he would do
that.
Yeah,
exactly.
Well, I think these days they'd call him an enabler, but...
Well...
I suppose in the Stone Age, you know, it was a quainter time. It was more, you know, it was a gentler time.
Well, they didn't always have TV, you know.
It's true.
Stone Age, they only had like 8 channels.
Yeah, and if the bird didn't fly back to you, how did the TV work? Which one was the TV? I don't remember.
That's a really good question. Like, they couldn't just sort of make that be an animal or something. It just did.
There must have
been
like
a chunk of rock that used magic.
No, well, there must have been some underlying technology. There must have been a bird or a rock or a... I don't know. That's all they had is bird and rock.
Something to say that it was a living.
Yeah. At the end, it had to turn to you and tell you that it was a living.
A turtle with sophisticated puppets or something?
I honestly don't remember. But no, I'm fairly certain that it couldn't have just been a television. Do they really get that lazy and they really just have them flip on the TV?
I think that they did. It's just they were just sort of sitting around, okay, wait, how do we make the television work? This episode needs a television. We got to make it play somehow. What does anyone know an animal that does that?
Why don't we just have them turn on a TV? Who's going to
know? It just works, okay? Fuck off. I like the way you think, Joe.
That would be Joe Rocket.
That guy gets a Hanna-Barbera promotion.
You think of any comedian you want and any animal, match them up. That's your show.
That's your show.
Brilliant.
Run with it.
Who's got an idea for the show? I've got an idea. Let's have engaging characters and thoughtful science fiction ideas.
Get out.
I've got an idea. Let's crap on the kids. I like that idea.
Now, can we pair some teenagers with an animal?
At least
an animal or a vehicle or something magical.
What well-known comedian would it be based on? I mean, you can't just have a character. Yeah, you can't just invent your own character. You have to base it on somebody.
How about a shark that sounds like Curly? Brilliant! You're hired.
How about a blue dog that sounds like Andy Griffith?
Those guys are so late. They just stopped animating stuff eventually.
Yeah.
They just sort of like held a picture up and like waggled its mouth.
Whatever you say, Fred.
Well, yeah, but they kept Mel Blanc in sandwiches through the 60s. I mean, once the Warner Brothers studio shut down, what else was he going to do, you know? I mean,
well, he escaped and became Woody Woodpecker.
No, that happened in the 30s. We established
really?
That previously, yes. Did you know this, Jason, that Mel Blanc was the original voice of Woody Woodpecker?
I don't know. I don't remember knowing that.
Yeah, that was just something we randomly stumbled upon when we discovered Matt's pure hatred for Andy Panda.
Fuck that guy.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, we're pretty open. Obviously, we've embraced the fish fucking and the furries and the incest and the robot fucking.
Did you embrace furries?
Oh, absolutely. This is ground we managed to cover in every single episode. Very, very briefly, so we don't cover too much of the same ground again. Matt dated a furry for some time. She had a Pikachu fetish.
Yeah, that was less nice.
And and every guest we have is fascinated by this and won't let it go. So by all means, if you have some kind of new question, some kind of new angle, go for it.
I hear what you're saying, and like every synapse in my brain is telling me to pursue this subject. and I understand that I'm going to just ask the same shit that everybody else asks.
Oh, no, but
it's weird because when she told me, every synapse in my head just shut down.
Well, I think so far the best thing was...
Who is supposed to dress up as Pikachu? That's all I need. That's what I need to know. Or is that a question?
If we had gone through with anything, it's supposed to have been me.
It would have been
that
you.
That she was showing me
and
was
she would have been playing the... Would she have been playing the part of Team Rocket?
Wow. Oh, you've broken Matt.
I love that. I'm so sorry that you didn't get a chance to live that.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, she had to do the oath before we had sex.
Oh, Lord. I think so far the best material this has delivered us is a few weeks ago, we had a good friend of ours that's a stand-up comedian on, and... Matt, very straight, didn't realize what he was saying, said, guys, really, what's so funny about me having the shit kicked out of me by someone dressed as Pikachu? and me and the guests were thousands of miles away, like you. He's in Jersey, long, long way away. And you could still feel us looking at each other and looking at him. What's so funny about him having the shit kicked out of him by someone dressed as Pikachu? He didn't understand. He couldn't comprehend. That this would be comedy.
You gotta understand, it's different when it happens to you.
Sure.
Sort of lose the comedy of the situation.
But it's funny when it happens to you.
Well, yeah, I can understand that.
And since, I should say, we've leveled the playing field by calling me out for my great love of incest. But,
Mighty love of incest.
Yes, my raging...
Is that your rap name, Mighty Love of Incest?
You don't have a lot of rhymes for incest, do you?
I don't know.
How's your freestyling skills? What do you got?
Let's see.
I hate to put you on the spot like this, but
No, I don't. Love it.
It's true.
I'd have to say,
that's okay. Well, we can cut out all this dead spice later.
Oh, no.
Embarrassing.
In fact, I'm going to put in the sound of a ticking clock.
All right, a rhyme for incest. Can you start me off? Why don't you give me an opening line? I'll see if I can finish it. It might take me an hour.
No, it's all right. I'm world-renowned for my love of incest.
Mm-hmm. Okay, how about I'm world-renowned for my love of incest. If I call your brother, you better think fast. It's close, but no cigar.
I like the way you're thinking there, but the rhyme is...
The rhyme's just not there.
Plus, my brother is gay, so I mean that really works. Like that.
Whoa,
that's gay.
Is that right?
Yeah, it's true.
Wait, is that true?
Yeah, it is.
No way.
Yeah.
Look at him.
Yeah, big gay homo.
Cody.
Yeah.
Did not know that.
Hasn't seen my brother for 20 years, so this is a bit of a revelation.
Yeah. I thought he would. I kind of thought he would be like in a biker gang or something like that.
No. Cute.
Well,
gay
it just
boy.
Depends on your on what kind of biker gang.
That's true. The Blue Oyster cult. The Blue Oyster Bar. Okay, Police Academy.
Oh yeah. No, we've rocked a few of those. I believe I just used rocked as a verb. I deserve a thrashing for that. But no, the Police Academy references. I don't even know if this made it on mic because I think we talked about this with Flonk and we lost that one. But you name a Police Academy movie and I can tell you what Police Academy 3 Back in Training. Just
four.
I know them all. Citizens on Patrol.
Six.
City Under Siege.
Which one's the, what do you call it? Which one's Mission to Moscow?
That was 7, but it wasn't actually numbered.
They just called it Police Academy Mission to Moscow?
Yes. Mahoney was only in through number 4, but Hightower was in all of them. And so on in this fashion. Like, I'm not...
And Tackleberry died.
Tackleberry died? That I didn't know.
Yeah, I think the guy that played him did.
Oh, well, that doesn't mean anything. Shit, have you not seen Weekend at Bernie's? That didn't affect us back in those days. We just kept on going. I think Jason's madly still working on his incest rhyme over there.
Yeah, it's true. I'm trying to figure out how to like take your mother for a spin test. I don't know. It's not working yet. Maybe by the end of the podcast, I'll have something.
That's fine. Actually, we need to now move on to the listener mail. This is a feature that we include the guest in. So feel free to jump in with some answers if you have any or any insight or whatever. We are gradually building up a very faithful audience. They've been very good at being vocal, being good fans, and
cool.
They provide us with regular feedback. So we have quite a few letters to answer here. Our first one comes from someone I believe you may know. This may take you back. You may have to strain to remember. Do you
remember this voice?
do you remember Beav?
Yeah, you know, I never knew him really, but well, I know the guy. Yeah.
Okay. Rob is his name. I believe he does not want his last name revealed, which is fine. And he asks, "Hi, Al, Matt, and panel guest. Can you explain why?" Oh, this one's directed specifically at me, but you guys certainly can jump in. Can you explain why or how noted joke thief Will Wheaton earned the title of noted joke thief? I do wonder about these things. If it has been explained somewhere, I've missed it.
Was actually in one of the Flonk episodes that died because Flonk doesn't know what a good microphone is.
It's true. There's a friend of ours that actually collaborated on our webcomic for a while. His online name is Flonk. And really, why would you need an actual name if your name is Flonk? So
he has a real name. I just don't remember what it is.
No, it's something forgettable like Steve or Bill or Kevin or
Steve
something.
Bill.
Yeah. But yeah, he has the world's worst microphone. And it was like in a contest, like they did a, you know, like Clive Anderson, you know, world's worst.
He was at the top of Cracked's 10 worst mics on Earth.
No, he was on the world's worst step on Whose Line. But yeah, we did cover this. Unfortunately, you guys haven't heard it. Very briefly on Twitter, when I first started on Twitter, it's been about a year ago now, last August. I was following Will Wheaton, formerly Wesley Crusher. And Jason, you may or may not be aware of this. Will Wheaton is actually sort of... very much had a comeback among our people, among the nerds.
Oh, sure. Yeah. He's an internet celebrity.
Yeah, quite entertaining. Especially, I would say, his reviews of the Next Gen. He does these great. Well, he has a unique perspective. Like, he's not afraid to say it sucks as a sci-fi fan, but then he'll also hit you with, I was there, this is why this happened. Patrick Stewart is so awesome. Oh my God, I can't believe they put me in a rainbow sweater. I mean, you know, good, interesting insights. But on Twitter, you know, he's one of the more followed guys. He's way up in the, I think, top 20. And it's, you know, when you're trying to kiss up to a celebrity that you're following, the protocol tends to be, you know, send your joke and see what happens. And ideally, they will repost what you have said.
Al has sent many to the XMST3K guys.
Oh God, yeah. The second,
including
guy,
your best friend Bill Corbett,
the second guy to play Crow on Mystery Science Theater.
Yeah, I know Bill Corbett.
Yeah, he's practically my best friend. No, I would say at least twice a week he will repeat something that I say or respond to something that I say. If I walked up to him at a convention and said, "Hi, I'm Algar," he would know who I am. That is the extent of it. We're not
friends. You're not doing it.
Not yet, but you know.
But then he'd be all like, "Ah, oh, hey, Algar," in like a Crow voice, and you'd freak the fuck out.
Oh, probably. And then I'd ask if he could.
Do you know if he has some kind of weird relationship with the lady?
Jesus,
what's her name? What's up?
Oh, Mary Jo
yeah.
Pell.
Yeah, Mary Jo Pell.
No, I don't think so. His wife posts on Twitter as well, and it's not her. She's now running with the Cinematic Titanic folks.
Joel and I'm digging on those.
Yeah, I saw them in Seattle a few months ago.
Live? Cool.
Yeah, that was fantastic.
That would have been awesome.
Yeah. Anyway, the Will Wheaton thing. So, of course, I was trying to impress him. I sent some jokes, and he repeated one. He didn't give me credit for it. Like, oh, well, we must have independently come up with the same joke. That happens. And then he did it again in about a week. And I realized this man does not give credit. This man will find your joke, and he will repeat it to everyone and claim that it's his own. He is a joke thief.
And that's why he's Al's nemesis. And why if you come see us at PAX this weekend, you get to see Al and him fight it out. So look forward to that.
I doubt that's going to happen. Also, by the time this posts, we will be long since
PAX. That's right. God damn it.
We're doing these a few weeks ahead of time. The Penny Arcade Expo, in case you don't know. But yeah, Will Wheaton is a joke thief. He is a notorious joke thief, and he's dead to me. So henceforth, he will be referred to as Noted Joke Thief Will Wheaton. That is his official title.
I just wish you had like a picture of him on your sleeve so you could tear it off. You're dead to me. Rip.
Yeah. No, he's the worst kind of comedian. He's the kind of comedian who steals and doesn't give credit. And I try whenever I take from somewhere to give credit because I believe that's fair and proper. A part of this email says, please find attached a picture I drew of Mattis Pikachu fucking various historical figures. Sadly,
there's nothing there I haven't seen before.
There's no picture attached, unfortunately.
But
boy, do I wish there was. And what does that say about me?
I do need a new cell phone wallpaper, so.
All right. Our next one comes from Adrian, our friend Adrian B. Awesome. And he writes, is there anything inherently funny about I Can Has Cheeseburger? Or does its staying power lie in the backdrop of adorable kittens?
I think it's really the adorable kittens thing at this point, you know?
Jason, thoughts? Are you down with the lolcats?
Can you indeed have
cheeseburger? It's an important movement. I can personally has cheeseburger. I can had one this a couple days ago. But yeah, I think that the lolcats are an emergent technology.
Okay.
That should be embraced.
See, I feel, I keep thinking, okay, well, this is one of those cute little internet memes. It's dead now. It's okay, yeah, Mr. G, ate your balls, okay.
No, this is the future. This is the future of comedy.
Yeah, that shit's not going anywhere.
It's true.
No.
But further than that, like, because, you know, I do get a little meta. I tend to get a little analytical when it comes to comedy. I take this stuff a little too seriously sometimes. But every time I look at one and I see a particularly good one, I get that involuntary response. I cannot help but laugh my fucking ass off. I don't get it.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing in the fiber of my being that analyzes comedy knows why it's funny, but fuck, it's funny.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, the I Can Has Cheeseburger isn't a great sort of name for it, but the fact that it exists is important.
It is, and it's funny, and I don't know why. And that's what troubles me more than anything. I don't know. It's just funny.
Are you familiar with the walrus picture concerning his bucket?
I've seen the bucket, yes.
I think it's genius. I think that's the future.
I can't. It's that feeling you get when you were like a kid and you first saw like Monty Python and you're like, this is great. What is this? Mm-hmm. Like, I don't get it. Yeah. This is like embracing absurdity and
yeah.
And
yeah,
I'm too much of an analytical nerd that
yeah, yeah.
I'm too much of an analytical nerd. I can't let it go. I know why Python's funny now, and I still don't. It drives me mad. It's like a fantastic mind puzzle.
I just see you standing over like a picture puzzle of them, just screaming at it. What are you?
Yeah. I, you know, you don't, you shouldn't.
Well, I mean, like I say, I laugh. It's not like I have no joy. I certainly enjoy it on that level. But then after exactly that, my reaction
you, right, you want to know and you want to extrapolate. But it's funny. It does take the emotion out of it. That's the and the emotion of the comedy is so great. The and that's what actually what I was leading into when I was talking about Africa before is that with that and Rocky Top and a couple of other things, the idea is that it highlights what's already completely ludicrous about the material, and in a way that is you know that is also very very silly.
It's
but that's what it's supposed to be doing is making something that I think is silly more obviously so. So it's because you can hear, you know, Africa in a song like that and not immediately think what a incredibly ridiculous thing is happening.
Well, and I definitely appreciate that. I mean, I've been doing these reviews of Transformers for, I don't know, since the Paleolithic era. And I'm so
the dawn of time.
It's true. And I'm still doing them and I'll still be doing them long after I'm dead. have you seen these things, Jason? And if don't feel the need to.
I saw the first one.
Okay, they've gotten better. I will say that. But I've done 70 some of these, and I'm really tiring of them. But this is the first thing I've ever really gotten a little bit of a following on, and I don't want to lose it.
Like, yeah,
these guys actually care, and there's a couple hundred people on YouTube every week, and it's like you know, and they're always commenting. I have the distinction, if nothing else, of having the best group of YouTube commenters. I've gotten in the over a year that I've done this, I've gotten one negative YouTube comment, you know, of the variety, you know, cocksucker, blah, 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 whatever. And the guy retracted it. He apologized.
Wow.
So I am currently.
That's unprecedented.
It is. I mean, you know, YouTube, you know, the
that's some kind of, that's like a mirror universe, YouTube.
But every week I get five or six comments. I mean, not tons, but a few. And they're all positive. It's all like, the worst of it is like, oh, you forgot this. Like, oh, no, Optimus Prime is really this. Or, you know, it was 7 million years ago, not six. Or, you know, nerdy, nitpicky things, but never negative.
It's just,
I mean, even my stupid thing got like a ridiculous anti-Canada rant on it.
Of course. And you're always going to get that. But
yeah,
somehow. But in any case, I do enjoy embracing the ridiculous. My absolute favorite episode of the series was and will continue to be the Hypnotic Nightclub episode, where where the Decepticons create a nightclub that hypnotizes construction workers and businessmen to build something that is ill-defined.
And exclusively playing Cold Slither.
Yes, and the gay and the very gay, obviously gay Corvette and his human lover Raul must stop this. Yeah. And I had to play it straight. I had to, you know, and people didn't get it, but it was like, look, this is why don't you see why this is great?
That's hysterical.
So moving on. I love explaining why things are funny. Yeah.
Can I say one thing?
Yeah.
My favorite episode of the old Battlestar Galactica is the episode where they landed on Starbuck landed on a planet to find that it was a cowboy planet, and the cowboy town was ruled by an evil cowboy Cylon.
God, I wish they'd remade that one for the new series.
Yeah,
I know, that would have kicked ass in the new series.
Did they do a lot of that? Like, I didn't really watch the Battlestar. Like, even as a kid, I knew, like, this isn't Star Wars. This wants to be Star Wars, and it's not Star Wars. I'm sure you knew that, too, but you pushed past it and enjoyed it anyway.
Yeah, I liked it.
But did they do a lot of that? Did they do a lot of that sort of old school Star Trek Doctor Who, where they're just like, hey, we got these costumes, we got these sets, let's go to the cowboy planet?
Just a few episodes near the end.
Ah, so it wasn't all about that.
Nah.
Ah, that's too bad.
Which is too bad. It might have endured longer.
It's true. But we did get that great. Aren't you just finishing that up now, Matt?
Yeah, I'm just done the last few episodes now.
Okay, I was gonna make a reference to the ending, but you're not there yet, so I'll.
Yeah,
I'll...
thank you.
You haven't gotten to the Great Betrayal.
No,
I was so mad. Everybody was so mad. I'm not mad at all. I'm totally cool with it.
I was okay, but I will just say, without spoiling, I was very much thinking Douglas Adams. Did you get that at all? Did you?
No, but, you know, that might be a reference that's over my head.
I'd have to give you more details, and I don't want to spoil it for him. So
No spoilery.
Yeah.
I love that show so goddamn much.
I will say that last batch of 10 episodes until the very end, I loved. Like, they really, they kind of departed for a little while, and I think they really came back to form, and that last little thrust at the end there was fucking fantastic.
Oh, fuck. Well, the two-episode mutiny episode that I just finished was fucking awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it really was. Like I feel like they lost their way kind of in mid-season three. And
they really lost me with when they turned it into like Night Court or whatever it was for a little while.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Oh, incidentally, Matt believes that the theme from Night Court is porn music. I don't know why, but that's. A couple of weeks ago, we were talking about porn music. And he's like, "What? Like, yeah."
Now we'll fuck. Da da.
So yeah.
I didn't. Those are the lost lyrics.
Da, 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 da.
Who is that?
And like, fuck more.
Is that like Wah-nah. Harry Anderson singing that to like?
Yeah, exactly.
Bull
to Bull, or possibly Marshall Warfield.
All right, our next question comes from Bob Mark Bosco.
Hey Bob,
and he says this is for LG specifically. Incidentally, Jason back in the day was known as Little Guy, and I occasionally still call him Little Guy or LG. So that's what I mean by that. Don't ask me why. He's not particularly little. It's just one of those things. How are hot dogs made? He wants to know.
They're made in much the same way that Vlad the Impaler made his subjects obedient.
Gotcha. All right.
Just imagine a cow instead of a guy.
Mm-hmm.
And also pieces of raccoon.
I think it's so nice that you see an impaled cow and you say every July peas grow there.
Both of those things are pushed through a sphincter. I think I can say that. I don't know everything about making hot dogs, but I know enough.
Anytime you could say the word sphincter is really a win in radio or podcasting. So
very good. Mission accomplished.
Yeah. All right.
Sphincter.
A sphincter says what?
Oh, please don't do that. Our next question comes from Flonk, he of the horrible microphone, and he asks,
"Hi, Flonk,
dear Algar and friends, that's unfair.
Yeah, what the hell?
Yeah, what's your favorite iPhone app?
I pity. Yeah,
which is
I pity, dude. Wait, one second.
I think I know. I think I can guess, but really, by all means,
God, I hope it's what I think it is.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I know."
Didn't your iPod die in a plane crash or something?
What? My iPhone died, but there was no kind of a plane crash.
Was it a train wreck?
Yes. Sorry, I dropped out.
Yes, it was a train wreck.
Oh, okay, my apologies.
It was two trains traveling and a word problem, and they destroyed my phone. That's what happened.
That's all was happening, though.
It's a rampant word problem.
You should have got your train insurance for your iPhone.
It's true. It's true. They offered it to me, and I said, "What am I going to need?"
What are the odds of that happening? Yeah. And the guy was like, "Well, one in three iPhones are destroyed that way."
I'm sorry. What was that iPhone? Ah, I see.
Okay, good. It was what I thought.
Please tell me that didn't cost you 99 cents.
I can shake my phone and it gives me one of over 100 Mr. T quotes.
Okay. Well,
I'm pretty sure it'd be cheaper to just hire Mr. T to come to your house and say the quotes.
Yeah. If you got a sandwich, you can pretty much do that. Was it a pay app? Did it cost you?
I would have paid a lot more. I don't remember actually. I would have paid 99 cents for it. Sure. I might have. Yeah.
How much would you like?
Sorry. I do actually. I do have time for jibber jabber, but he does not.
No, he does not. I do tend to jibber jabber. So I mean, he is correct there. I can't fault the T for that.
Is he getting on an airplane?
Wait. He ain't getting on no airplane. I know that much.
So he ain't getting on any airplanes.
No, he ain't getting on no
airplane. All right.
I'm looking through my iPhone now, trying to find some kind of interesting or fascinating app, and mine are all so boring. I think the best thing that I have, and this is really stupid, of course everyone has this, is just an app to use Wikipedia, because I like to pretend that I'm using The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. That's it. I like to
put
things up on my phone. You
basically are.
Yeah, I mean, there's really nothing. I have one that you can play old text games on. I can play Zork on my phone. That's
pretty fucking cool.
Yeah, it's super.
Not really.
Until your phone is eaten by a Gru.
Make it go airplane. There you go.
awesome.
Yeah.
Okay, so I think... Oh, Matt, what's your favorite
iPhone?
Oh,
I don't have an iPhone.
That
I have
means
a
nothing. Finger. Answer the question. Don't wait for the translation. Answer me now.
Did play music?
Play music.
Robot?
That's your answer. Play music.
I get a BlackBerry. The best app I have on that is the one that lets me use Twitter at work.
That's pretty good.
Nicely done.
Thank you, T.
All right.
Ladies and gentlemen, our special guest, Mr. T.
do they happen to have the quote on there where he explains the meaning of his name?
Yeah, if I'm getting my money back, if they don't.
Okay. You know the one I mean, right?
Yeah, he's got – yeah, it's his name.
Yeah, or his first name. First name is Mr. in my middle – yeah, right. Speaking on that subject
–
go ahead.
My what do you call it? My favorite Mr. T quote was coming back. I think he went on Conan O'Brien or something, and he was like, for a long time, Mr. T went away. Fools went unpitted. Jibber jabber went unchallenged.
Really, he actually embraced the sort of meta.
Yes,
like, wow,
it was fucking awesome.
That is pretty great. Although I will say, I don't think you could ever pinpoint a period where Mr. T actually came back. He's always sort of been looming in the shadows.
No, he did a great couple episodes of Conan where he just completely embraced the Mr. T thing. They went apple picking. It was awesome.
I should watch more Conan. I never get around to it. I know it's a great show. I don't really commit to shows like that. But
Conan wrote a song about him.
Did Conan actually write a song about him?
Yes, it was called You're Not Cool, I Pity the Fool Who Messes with T.
Have you heard Mr. T's song? Treat Your Mama Right.
Oh, of course.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. That's a hell of a thing.
That is. That
I love that song.
That was topped only by our mutual friend Adam Darren, Mark's brother, was obsessed for some time with the Hulk Hogan song, "The Hulkster's in Heaven."
Oh yeah.
Which is just a little bit.
Oh, that's a really messed up song, isn't it? It's about a kid that dies.
Yeah. 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 And
what a terrible idea that was.
And he thinks it's this heartfelt, sweet thing, and it's just, on the one hand, it's Hulk Hogan with a fucking guitar, but on the other hand, it's really morbid and terrible. I mean, there's so many levels to it. It's fantastic.
Yeah, and the whole thing is to, you know, is to increase the heat of the Hulkamaniacs. It's like, I'm saying, you shouldn't write kids about dead, I mean, you shouldn't write songs about dead kids for money. That's what I think.
Yeah, I can really agree with that.
I don't know. I mean, I'm
talking to you, Eric Clapton.
I don't know. My brain is sort of conjuring up a list of dead kid songs, and I don't know. There's a few good ones. I mean, there's it's sort of a mysterious. Maybe it's not about a dead kid, but I always thought the what is it? Ode to Billy Joe was about a dead kid. You know the song I'm talking about?
I don't know that one.
God, I can't remember. I'm not going to sing it, and I can't remember who did it, so never mind.
When Billy Joe McAllister jumped off the Tallahassee Bridge?
That's the one. Thank you. Thank you for that.
That's true. That's a good song.
I knew you guys knew. And that's about a dead kid, isn't it?
That's about a dead kid? Huh.
I don't think...
Well, he jumped off the fucking bridge. What do you think?
Yeah, I didn't think it was about a kid.
Well, I don't think it would have been an event if he had survived.
Right. And the chick who's there with him is living with her parents, so I mean...
Huh. All right.
I would assume she's not old. I don't know. Maybe I'm crazy on that one. And didn't Eminem do a song about a dead kid?
Yeah, it's not the same.
Yeah. All right. Fair enough.
I mean, that would really Joe McAllister, though, I think you probably got me on.
All right. Those are just the two immediately that jumped to mind. I'm sure I know more. I don't know. Probably something obscure. And I don't know. Never, I was trying to go somewhere with that and I lost it. Never mind. Just forget it. Forget it.
I thought you were going to talk about Christmas shoes.
What?
The Christmas song with the kid whose mom dies.
Oh God, what was that?
I know Patton Oswalt did a bit on it.
Yeah, that's what it was. I knew someone. Yeah, I was.
Yeah, the abortion song. I've seen that the guy. He's come out with more songs from that child's point of view. We're talking about the dead aborted child song.
Yeah, yeah.
Is that correct?
Oh, Lord.
Yeah. So no, he's that kid, he's got a whole album like that as that character now. I think.
And
songs from a dead abortion.
Yes.
And you're
you know why? Dance. Because he works for God, and God is a fuck.
Ah.
Welcome to episode 7.
Can that be the
seven.
Title of this episode?
Yeah, I was just about to say, welcome to episode 7, God is a fuck. Fine with me. Although although our friend Flonk does enjoy signing his emails, yours in Christ, which got probably the biggest laugh out of Matt I've ever heard. I don't know why that's funny, but there you are.
It's not just when he does it. I think it's funny when anyone signs yours in Christ.
All right, then. I actually had a good segue, and now we've gotten off topic, and so now, once again, back into the rotten segues. Speaking of names, meanings behind names, I do have an unprecedented situation here. Jason, you are, in fact, the person who gave me the name Algar years ago.
Oh, shit. Is this a secret origin?
Oh, yeah.
He may not even remember it. And it's
no, I remember.
Do you? can you tell it in an interesting way? Because I've not managed to do that in 20 years.
Well, if it was... you know what? The thing about it is that Al got people booze when he was in high school, and that was one of the ways that he showed his quality as a member of the fellowship.
It's true. We traveled with a small pack of gentlemen who associated ourselves with the animal, the otter.
Yeah, we had a little club, and it was it was great, and we made movies, and we're basically goofy in a really boring town, and it you know, it built all of our characters in wonderful ways.
Charming nerds, I would say, is what we were.
Totally, we were. Yeah, exactly. It was like a way being, you know, in that particular little clique or whatever was a way of being a total nerd and still maybe getting laid.
And that's kind of
like the late 80s.
That kind of calls back to what I was saying before, that you and the other guys too very much managed to pull off being nerds and still have girlfriends. And back then that was not as easy as it is now.
That's true. It took some finagling.
Yeah, absolutely.
For both of those things. Anyway, the main thing is that there is that factor, and also that he didn't have a really stupid nickname and everybody else did. And they were given the stupid nicknames in a pejorative way by someone that had arrived in the clan earlier than them, and they were pretty much always supposed to be a name that you would not necessarily be super proud of.
Sort of like a hazing ritual. Sort of like a.
It's basically a hazing. But the thing is I think Al didn't. I didn't really realize that part of it either, but anyway, Al wanted one, so there was like a quest to achieve him one, I think.
Yeah, and we had a lot of failed bad names, like a lot of names that didn't stick, thankfully.
Mm-hmm. Well, considering the use you've got of Algar, good lord.
Well, and that's the thing I wanted to establish is not that it matters, not that anyone cares, but really this isn't just an online name. It's not like it's not from anything. It's not like it's not a screen name. It's been my nickname for of my life than it hasn't been at this point.
Right. And it started off as an acronym, but really almost immediately thereafter transcended it's from being an acronym to just being a name, just like, you know.
Yeah. And to this day, it's a great screening tool for if someone calls my home asking for Algar, I know they're worth talking to. If someone calls my home.
Oh, yeah, nice. Then I know it's easy to alphabetize.
It's true.
It's true.
That's very true. But for the record, it was an acronym. Do you care to share it? I don't really. If you don't, that's fine.
No, it was the all around Laker God and rich guy because he had like a pool at his house and.
Well, the reason I was able to procure you guys liquor was because my parents owned a bar.
Right,
they had a fairly successful nightclub, and I was perceived probably not wrongly as something of a rich guy. We did have a swimming pool. I had sort of the nicer.
This was in comparison to like, you know, everybody was pretty much lower middle class.
Yeah. And we were middle class. Like it wasn't, you know, we weren't rich, but, you know, we had a pool and I had the nicest computer of us. So we'd go over to my house to play Monkey Island because I had VGA. But beyond that,
I knew that Al was a winner because he had memorized every word of the Star Wars films and could just recite them from any point. And I'd never known anyone that had achieved anywhere near a goal like that, some kind of lofty accomplishment.
And we did actually
true then as it is today.
And we did address that in episode one when we forbid ourselves from making Star Wars references. The fact that I do have that recall. Even the words that aren't exactly English or human.
Sure.
And in any other group, that would have been seen sort of as freakish, as something you should play down. But thankfully, among the otters, it was,
I think there was, it was something like there was a scene where I think C-3PO is narrating something really dry over like an image of like a, you know, this terrible late 70s little graphic of
when they change
diagram.
Yeah.
And
this is actually the first example of George Lucas doing a special edition, and I don't know if it was between the video release and the HBO release or whatever, but the copy that I had did not have a tiny little piece of dialogue over, and I'm going to break our rule briefly just so I can say what
it's
I'm talking
about.
It's
worth it.
All right.
The power grid is... Fuck, I don't remember the exact line.
Oh, my God!
The power grid is held by... No, I've lost
they've
it. I'm
cut,
sorry.
They've cut Samson's hair.
Well, now I'm casting you out.
Believe me, this—they probably haven't played this since like 1984.
What the hell?
No. The line is there now. My point was the line was not there in the version that I originally saw and memorized. We had a VHS copy from HBO, is how I watched it over and over and over again, and it was not there. And at some point when they released it on VHS, he decided, oh, we better put this line of clarification in. Anthony Daniels, throw this extra line of exposition here. The power grid is coupled at two main... Fuck.
This is a ridiculous line to even know the beginning of.
It doesn't matter. It really... I should know this. But in any case, yeah, that's how... That was sort of my... Yeah, yippee. I can get you guys free booze, and I can... If you're not near a TV that's playing Star Wars, I can recite it for you.
Just break out the action figures.
Yeah.
Al, we want to see Star Wars. All right, hang on. Da, 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 nah. Where's my Star Destroyer?
Yeah. More or less. So yeah, but yeah, we had fun. We had a good time. It was a great group of guys. Great time, and I'm sure Mark and I will discuss this further when he's on. We are broadcasting from the Penny Arcade Expo this coming weekend, which by the time you people hear this will be long past. But and we will be finally, after all these weeks talking about him, interviewing our very famous friend, Mark Darren, who is now working on the Monkey Island games.
The man, the myth, the legend.
Really, of our little group, we've all gone on to our measures of success. None of us is
probably the most deserving of it too.
Oh, absolutely. But really, none of us is a failure. We're all still doing something. But Mark, by all means, has excelled far beyond any of us. And he was driving Ron Gilbert around in his car. just hanging out with the guy who created Monkey Island.
That's so fucking cool.
Yeah, you know, just hanging out. So I think that's pretty much all I wanted to cover here. Oh, we do have actually one more from Flonk, of course.
No, of course it's from Flonk. Hi, Flonk.
It's a very profound question. He wants to know what the haps is. What's the haps, he says. That may be the worst question you've ever sent, Flonk.
And, Flonk, you're so fired.
Of all the questions, all the threads, all the everything, you must have sent 100,000. This one is the worst. This is really
it. You're scraping the bottom of the bottom of the barrel that's underneath the barrel that you scrape the bottom of.
I think I do have the answer, though.
Yeah?
Oh, what do you got?
I believe that the haps is a degenerative neurological condition that is characterized by being unusually cheerful and ends in desiccation and death.
Wow.
There you have it.
And if that's not true, it is now. Jason, thank you very much for joining us. We really appreciate it.
I wonder if I could plug my website.
Oh, that, absolutely. Of course. That's what I was winding into here. By all means, please do.
What we're here for.
Yes.
Okay. My website is YouTube. And you want to go to YouTube, and I'll be on there somewhere. I'm also doing we're doing this. The Figment Theater Company is putting on a bunch of monster plays in the end of October. If anybody's ever in or around New York around the Halloween area, come see these plays. They're going to be fun.
And like I said, I have read a play that he's written, and I can speak very highly. Not just because he's my friend, but I legitimately wished I'd seen this performed. It's great stuff.
Thanks, guy.
Great. And we'll be providing
one more thing
to YouTube in the show notes.
Also, one more thing is that we're doing nerdy trivia events, True Nerd Trivia, which is where there are trivia contests where you all of the questions are from the world of fantasy and your own imagination. That's a lot of fun. And that's it. And I think I've got the end of your rhyme here. What was the beginning?
I'm world-renowned for my love of incest.
I'm world-renowned for my love of incest. I'll surprise my nerdy son, open his eyes, and make him squint less.
Not bad.
It's a reference to, you know, giving it, you know.
If there's one thing we love is explaining a joke, please, by all means.
What do you call it? Surprise. Surprise. Anyway.
Gotcha. Very nice.
There was actually one more site that I'm surprised you had mentioned. Is it not for public consumption or the...
worldofjasoncraft.com is a site that has got a lot of legacy stuff. One of my favorite things is the expose I did of Coco the Gorilla's AOL chat, in which is actually a pornographic chat, but it was not widely publicized as being such. that's a high point. And also a site called jzn.me.
Oh, I was not aware of that one.
That's all. That's going to be all the new junk. There's like three videos on there now. I'll be piling stuff on there as we go.
Fantastic. Well, I know this is sort of the jive radio guy thing to say. You know, oh, you should check this stuff out. But really, Jason is a guy I have looked up to for years and years. He's insanely creative, and we'll be playing whichever song you like at the end of the podcast. Here, we'll talk about that in a moment. And really, you should check his stuff out. It's fantastic. Our info, as always, follow us on Twitter. I am Algar, Algar. Matt is Robot Matt. Our crap is on my website, algar.com.
Remember to give us a review on iTunes. We appreciate each and every one of them.
Yeah. And please keep the mail coming, podcast@algar.com. Really, we do appreciate it. Maybe less from Flonk, maybe more from people with some good questions. But
you have to appreciate his passion for sending us questions.
It's true, and this will not
deter
him.
The man's doing what
way.
He loves.
It's true. So really, thanks once again, Jason, and thank you guys
this
for
was
listening.
Great.
And stand by.
Musical interlude.
Thank you.
why some shit is waiting there for you.
The Sarcastic Voyage podcast is published weekly and is available via iTunes or on the web at algar.com. Audience feedback can be sent to podcast@algar.com or sent via Twitter to @algar. The Sarcastic Voyage podcast is written and produced by Ron Algar Watt and the featured guests, unless otherwise noted. All material contained herein is the property of Ron Algar Watt. Copyright 2009, Algar Productions.